In our study, we're talking about missions, mission work, sharing the gospel with people, basically, is what it's about. And in this particular, this first lesson that we're looking at the vision of Jesus, focusing on what was the vision that Jesus had for the lost, and how did that affect what he did and how he related to people and so forth. So we started out in, we were looking at some different situations. We're looking at the multitude that Jesus, that come to Jesus. We talked about the sinful woman, and then we talked about Zacchaeus. Last week, as we were finishing up, I asked you to look at the middle of page 3 there, where it has, name 3 family members or friends who are lost. How do you see them? I ask you to spend some time on that. Think about that. Pray about that. Because here's 2 things about that I think are the most significant. Number one, if you don't recognize that people are lost, okay, then you're not going to do anything about their situation. And so it's first and foremost the matter of recognizing that people out there are lost, and we need to take that seriously, as we've been talking about for the last year now, over a year now, and really understanding the fact that people who are outside of Christ are lost, and that's an emergency. That's something we need to respond to. Okay. The other part of that is then what will that, if that's the vision that we have, what will that cause us to do for those folks? So I'm hoping that, and we're not going to have you necessarily talk about those folks, but it's really a matter of looking at within your, this has within your family. Okay, so we've been talking about our Jerusalem, our Judea. This is more of the Jerusalem part. This is our family members. We recognize, first of all, some that are lost, and then what is the vision that we have for them? How do you see those people? Okay, which then affects how you're going to respond to them. Now, let me give you an example of different responses that we can have. All right, we have folks, I have people in my Jerusalem, family members, who are not Christians. But I have made an effort to talk with them over, over the past about studying the Bible, about the Lord, and so forth. I have been able to bring 2 of my siblings, my brother and one of my sisters, to the Lord. However, right now, neither one of them are faithful. They know the truth. They've been taught. They've both been baptized. But they're not being faithful right now. Okay? I have an uncle who, back years and years ago, when we were living up in Spotsylvania, or actually in Charlottesville, first church that I ever worked at, we were there, and he and my aunt, and sometimes they would convince my mom and dad to come with them, they would come down once a year from Buffalo and spend a weekend, long weekend, holiday weekend with us and visiting my sisters and so forth. My uncle would, I talked with him about the Lord, and he just flat out let me know he wasn't interested. By that time in his life, he was just pretty fed up with religion, period. Been Catholic all of his life, was pretty frustrated with the Catholic Church and, a lot of things that had gone on and so forth, and he just really didn't want to have anything to do with religion. I think that when it comes to believing in God, that there's a God, he does. But as far as going to church, studying the Bible, any of that kind of stuff, he didn't want to have anything to do with it. And he let me know that. But he did it in a kind way. But he just let me know. Now, he's lost. Okay? they would still come down every year to visit with us. We welcome them in and, you know, and so forth. We just didn't talk religion. We talked about all kinds of other things, family and, you know, whatever else is going on, but we didn't talk about religion. That was his choice. And so, in other words, what I'm saying is, this says, you know, well, how do we see these folks? Well, I see them as lost. But they've had opportunity to know the truth. They've been given that opportunity. They've chosen not to. They don't want to know. So I carry on a relationship with them. He's still my uncle. My aunt has since passed away, but he's still my uncle. In fact, planning on seeing him this coming summer. He's coming up from, he lives in Florida now. He's coming up to visit with all of us this summer. My brother and sister, you know, I see them. They're my brother and sister. We just don't talk a whole lot about religion because they're just not really that interested. My brother, sometimes he and I get into, you know, talking some about it, but, you know, just not really that interested. So my point here is just to say that, you know, I think we all look in our Jerusalem. We have family members that, you know, are like that, okay? Do we make the effort to try, share with them, and they make it clear by either verbal, I'm not interested, or just by their actions, they just don't want to? It's not something we need to keep hounding them about and, you know, and try to force them and all that kind of stuff. They know. They make choices. We need to focus on other folks in our Jerusalem. I still see them as lost. But they know that they have the opportunity to know the truth and have the truth, but by their choice, they don't want it. We just have to realize that, yes, there are going to be people like that in our Jerusalem, but there's still a lot of others who we need to be seeking the Lord. Okay? Wes?
Yeah, Russ, when I wrote my little bit down, I had that in mind. I wrote down that I saw him as lost and needed, but also refusing salvation.
Okay.
I can relate back to myself, and I probably never said this before, but brother, when he used to come over to our house, family over the church and kind of pray. I used to do everything in my power to try to deter him to go the other way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes just didn't really want to see him come because I know he was going to somewhere along the line tell me before we leave, hope to see his church tomorrow, or hope to see his church Sunday.
Yeah.
And our relationship was still good, you know, because, you know, he was one of the brothers that I was fairly close to. I could talk with him about other things and whatnot. And I see my family members the same way. The only thing I can see is to do is if they don't want to accept it, then whenever you get a chance, the same way he did me,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing different conversations, not saying every time, because he did it every time I saw him. I knew he was going to say that. But if you still just do that, because our job is to plant the seed
right.
and throw it out, then we can't make anybody, you know, change their mind. But still, by our actions and what we do, it will still make them see something in us that might, somewhere down the line, change their mind.
Absolutely. And you never know what's going to happen in that person's life somewhere down the road that might change their mind about things and so forth. I had a fellow that, a family, when I was preaching in Charlottesville, we had this young lady started coming there to worship, and she was a member of the church, and she had moved back home because her mother had cancer, and she had moved back home to try to take care of her mom. And she asked me to come out and visit and study with her mom. And so I did. And her mom, Carol, was really interested in studying the Bible and, you know, and so forth. And but her husband, Tony, when I would show up, he would leave. He didn't want to have anything to do with it, and he would just, he was nice. He was never rude or anything, but he just, you know, I'm out of here. And so we never really had much opportunity to talk at all. But I studied with Carol on a regular basis. And then I got a phone call one day from Bonnie, who called me to say that Mom was in the hospital at MCV, and she was dying. And could I come down there? And so I went down and went in there and talked with her. And she told me she hadn't been baptized yet. And she said, Russ, I want to be baptized. And, well, I knew that her husband, Tony, was kind of antagonistic towards, you know, the whole thing. And so I told him, I said, Tony, I said, she wants to be baptized. And he said, whatever she wants, do it. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, Carol passed away. And not long after that, Tony called me. And he wanted to study. And so we studied the Bible together, and I baptized Tony. And then not long after that, I turned around and performed a wedding ceremony for him and his sister-in-law, okay, Carol's sister. Her husband had passed away, and the two of them, they decided they wanted to get married, and so did that. And so the point there is just that, again, we never know. At first, he was very antagonistic, you know, and just didn't want to have anything to do with it. But the Lord, I think, used his wife Carol in her situation to soften his heart. So we don't close the door, okay? But, you know, at some point you recognize, you go, okay, I'm not going to try to force it. I'm just going to go on doing what I need to do and you never know. Okay? So, think about that in terms of the family members that you have. Okay? Your Jerusalem. Those who are close to you in that regard. How do you see them? How do you see them right now in their life? All right? So, let's talk about section number two here. A compassionate vision. I can't remember. Did we cover this part last week? I don't think we did. I think this is where we had left off with that three family members. The Lord's vision. We're looking at Matthew chapter 9, verse 36, and Mark chapter 6, a little bit more than verse 34, though those are the two verses that say the same thing. In Matthew chapter 9, Jesus here, Matthew is telling us that Jesus is going through the towns and villages. He's teaching the people and so forth. And verse 36, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. And he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. In Mark chapter 6, we have a little bit different situation here, okay? Jesus, again, he's going around teaching and preaching and so forth. But on this occasion, there were so many people flocking around him that Jesus said, let's kind of get away from all this crowd for a little while. Let's go off to a quiet place so that we can get some rest, okay? So verse 32, they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. So we see that similar statement in both situations, both circumstances, where Jesus is looking at the people and he sees them as sheep without a shepherd, okay? So when we look at this first part, how did Jesus feel when he saw the people coming out to him? Okay? Compassionate? What else? What did you put down there? Think about what must have been going on in Jesus' heart and his mind, you know, his gut feeling for these people to cause him to respond the way he did. He saw them as sheep without a shepherd. What's going on inside of Jesus, do you suppose? Okay.
Something that Jesus had that they needed.
And okay.
He recognized that they were anxious to listen to it.
Okay.
So they sometimes don't always get the opportunity to have such a receptive audience.
Okay.
So he saw that he could provide them spiritual food.
Okay. All right, so he's got compassion. He sees a need. What else? Okay, yeah, an opportunity here. I mean, lots of opportunity, right? Okay. What did he say to his disciples in the Matthew account? The harvest is what? Plentiful. There's plenty of opportunity out here to share the gospel with folks. There's not a whole lot of workers, though, to do the harvesting. All right? Okay. What else? Why do you think Jesus felt the way that he did? Wes?
In doing this study, Russ, what I get out of it, one of the things I got out of it, is you said the word compassion. And my mind went back to the scene with the person that was on the side of the road that was injured, and the priest and the rabbi.
Okay, the Good Samaritan, right? Okay.
Yes. And in today's society, sometimes people have compassion for other people when they see them in a dire situation or whatnot.
Okay.
But it's the difference between having compassion and having compassion that moves you to do something.
Okay.
And
all right.
In this case, what Jesus had, compassion, that moves them to want to help the people, whereas, you know, we see people sometimes and, you know, unless it's something that we can maybe do immediately, we may do something, but other than that, we say, oh, my heart goes out to them, and that's it.
Yeah, and off we go, okay.
You know, it's like we got compassion, we feel for people, but we don't have that motivation to want to, what can I do?
Okay.
You know, I need to do something. I mean, it's I don't know, I guess it's a part of human nature in some cases. You know, you don't feel like you want to get involved, you know.
Okay.
It doesn't concern me, you know. You even say to yourself, well, yeah, I feel for me, nothing I can do, you know. I don't know what it is that's in people in general, you know, to make you feel that way. But in Jesus' case, he had compassion that moved him to want to do something to help. I think that's what we have to seek in ourselves, to find that motivation of what can I do?
Right.
I want to do something. I mean, we see that when disaster strikes, we're ready to contribute some money or something, or get some supplies or something together, you know, but not all the time we make the first attempt to do that. We just, oh, I'm so sorry, the house burned down, or flood washed them out, or whatever. Even you see people on the road that had an accident, and it's, oh, it's terrible, but you don't die 911.
Okay. You know. All right. Let me ask you this. Oh, okay, we got a couple of hands up here. With you wholeheartedly on that, and I think the proof is that you know that we have what's called an Endangered Species Act, federal laws that protect sea turtles and all kinds of, you know, sea mammals and so forth, that if you tamper with, not necessarily destroy, but tamper with a sea turtle nest or an egg, you can get fined up to $25,000, and I think it's 5 years in jail. It's okay to kill unborn babies, though. Say they're not endangered species. So, you know, yeah. Okay, Chuck?
I was thinking the same thing. You know, God has wanted a relationship with man since the fall, and he loved us so much that he was willing to sacrifice his own son. Jesus loves those people more than they love one another or they could ever love themselves.
Okay.
And he's looked at them with he is love.
Okay. What causes us? There's a word I'm looking for. What causes us to love someone that much, to have that kind of compassion, or to not? Where, yeah, we'll take care of the puppies, but people, they're what? There's one particular thing, quality, that we have to recognize about people. Anybody know what it is? Okay, but we recognize they have a need, but what causes us to take care of that need? That's what I'm looking for. Okay, keep going. You're getting there. Okay, all right. It really, hang on just a second here. I think, to me, the key to it all is value. Do we see the value of people? You see? And I think that's what Jesus saw because of what he wanted, Chuck, a relationship with us. He sees people as valuable, every single one. They're valuable. Okay? And so if we see their value, then that will motivate us, I think, more to do what we can to take care of whatever their need may be, especially their situation of being lost. But if we don't see their value, if just people are a pain in the neck, I don't want to be bothered with them, and so on and so forth, then we won't do what we can and what we should for folks. We've got to understand, we've got to see people as valuable. Why do we have so much crime, and especially the kind of mass shootings and stuff that we have where people just, you know, want to take out their anger and just kill a bunch of people? I've been saying this for a long time. A lot of it has to do with that. We've lost the sense of the value of human life and human beings. Why are we willing to abort, you know, hundreds of thousands of babies every year? Because we don't see the value of them. If people understood the value of human life and of human beings, that wouldn't even be an issue. But we've lost that. We need to get it back. We need to have that in order to motivate us to see what people need and be willing to take care of their need, whatever we can do for them and so forth. A couple of hands up here, Ann and Julie here.
I think what I was connecting to with that, Jesus is our Father.
Okay.
We are His children. He loves us with the connection of a parent.
Okay.
Parent would do anything so he has that overall love. And we are all brothers and sisters, and we need to see each other as brothers and sisters, not that person over there, because if he's our father, we are all brothers and sisters, and we need to look beyond just a person, but this is a fellow brother or sister.
Okay. We also have to carry that to those who are not yet our brothers and sisters. We've got to see the value in them also, that they're God's creation also, and we need to, you know, we need to have that same understanding of them. Yeah, you had your hand up a moment ago.
Yeah, God could harden the heart of Pharaoh. You know, he also has the ability to put in us love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, Chuck, go ahead, real quick.
All right, well,
we're going to move on here.
We've got compassion, but some, you know, sometimes that's, sometimes we're not feeling it. And the other thing is, we have responsibility.
Right.
That is, you know, part of the expectations.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sometimes you're feeling, but when you're not, you still have that responsibility.
Okay. All right. What would it be like to be a sheep without a shepherd?
Scary.
Scary? Okay.
I'd be lost.
Lost?
Mm-hmm. Wandering.
Okay. Wandering around? What else?
Not just wandering as a group, possibly wandering in all different directions.
Okay.
There's nobody to tell them. Way, so before long they're not going to be a group. There's going to be a lot of individual sheep all wandering out wherever they happen to go.
Okay.
There's a separate wolf in the
world. Wolves out there, okay.
Oblivious to the danger, that's
why. Okay, all right. Yeah, you know, I've done a lot of reading about sheep and so forth. I understand that sheep are really pretty stupid. They're just dumb animals. You know, they just, you know, that's why they're so easily led and so forth. You know, sheep will follow whatever the sheep in front of them is doing. If they're in a line, they will do what the one in front of them does. You ever watch a video of sheep like going in or out of a corral or whatever, and they're jumping over a little fence or whatever? You know, it's like, even if the fence is removed, they will still jump because the one in front of them jumped. Okay. In other words, they're just kind of there doing their thing and not really paying attention. They're oblivious. They just, you know, they're just not too bright from what shepherds will tell you. So what does that tell you? They need lots of care. They need lots of direction. They need lots of looking over and leadership and so forth. It never make you wonder why God kind of in his word over and over again compares us to sheep, you know. But here's the thing to think about along with this line here. Jesus looks at them and says that he sees them as like sheep without a shepherd, but they had religious leaders.
Sometimes they do more harm than good.
Okay.
But with the sheep, you know, you hear about sheep and goats. Sometimes they would intermingle the goats in the herd because the goats were less stupid.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, in the absence of a shepherd, sometimes the goats could protect the sheep.
Yeah.
Or guide the sheep. And I think that's what the religious leaders are, or the goats in the flock, not the shepherd.
Okay.
But they're at least the goats.
Okay.
Well, they didn't appear to be compassionate. They were just hardline rule, here's what you need to do, ritual. You know, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this. There didn't appear, from everything we've read within the Bible, they didn't appear to have any compassion whatsoever.
All right.
Or care.
John chapter 10, Jesus talks about himself being the good shepherd, right? And he compares himself to the hireling. Okay, who doesn't really care a whole lot about the sheep. He's just there to do a job. Okay, and in a lot of ways, I think that's kind of how we can see him. That's what Jesus is really talking about. You know, the religious leaders of Jesus' day, they were kind of like the hirelings. They were given a responsibility, but they weren't taking it seriously because they really didn't care much about the sheep. Okay? What would it have been like, the next to the last question on here, what would it have been like for that multitude? Okay? Try to put yourself in that crowd, in that multitude of people who are chasing after Jesus, okay? As James was pointing out, they're traveling, they're going ahead of Jesus. They want to be there. What would it have been like to be part of that?
Yeah. I bet they were filled with hope.
Okay. All right. Filled with hope.
It was like a hunger to understand. It was almost like, you know, I really need this within me. I need, you know, to process it, to understand it, to be a part of it. You know, they just, how can I get part of this?
Okay. Okay.
Right. Waiting on them because they had a strong desire enough to fight crowds and pay for tickets and go and deal with parking and finally get here to hear
okay.
this person.
All right.
Okay. There's a great amount of curiosity.
Okay.
Also, the word is getting out that this man healed. This man is caused miracles. There's a scuffle in the temple. Who is this guy?
Yeah.
Who is this?
And he's different than their religious leaders. Remember that at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, okay, after Jesus had preached to the multitudes there, anybody remember what it says about the people's response and so forth? Anybody recall what it says there? They were amazed at his teachings. Why?
Because he taught as one with
authority. Yeah. He taught as one with authority, not as their teachers of the law. They recognized something different about this guy and the things he's saying, the things he's doing. So, yeah, I think being in that crowd of folks, there's got to be this energy of excitement and so forth going on. Again, keep in mind that, you know, at the back of everybody's mind at that particular time was what? Yeah, they're waiting for the Messiah. Many had come claiming to be the Messiah before Jesus, but there's something different about this guy. Okay? All right? The last question on here, what would it be like for your friends? Okay? In terms of having the opportunity to hear about Jesus. Have you ever thought about it in that way? I mean, we just typically look at, you know, our friends or family, those in our Jerusalem, and say, they wouldn't be interested. They're not church people. We write them off. What would it be like, do you suppose, for your friends to have the opportunity to hear about Jesus? In other words, think about them that way. Okay, that's what I'm encouraging you to do. Let's talk about the section 3, the back page here. I'll try to finish up this lesson today. Dale is going to be teaching next week, and I don't know, Dale, you decided you're going to do start on lesson number 2? Or
yeah,
okay. So everybody, and I do have, by the way, some sets of the lessons. If there's anybody that did not get a set of the first 6 lessons in study, then I've got some up here. But we'll be doing lesson number 2. Dale will start on that next week. Okay, the Lord's vision, a practical vision. All right, we're looking at these 3 different encounters that Jesus had with people. The question is, What did Jesus' compassion move him to do for? First of all, the multitude. Okay, in Mark chapter 6, Luke chapter 9, what did Jesus do for them? Right, which was what?
Taught the word.
Okay.
Taught what they needed to hear.
Knowledge.
Okay. What else did he give them? Okay.
Food.
He gave them food. He fed them. You know, after teaching them for a while, then the disciples come and say, you know, hey, you know, it's been going on for a while. It's like, you know, this concert's been, you know, going on for a while. People are starting to get hungry. And so we're sending the people to the nearby town so they can get something to eat. And what does Jesus say to his disciples? You feed them. Okay? You feed them. Now, the accounts tell us that there were 5,000 men plus women and children there. Okay, so we've got a huge crowd of folks. Right? Any of you ever been to a concert or some kind of event, even a church assembly, where there's some 15,000 people, suppose, around there? It's a lot of folks, isn't it? I think one of the greatest experiences has been, we used to go to the Nashville Jubilee years ago when they were having it, and they would have this big singing thing, you know, in the arena there in Nashville, and you're talking about, you know, thousands and thousands of Christians scattered all over this auditorium singing. It was just amazing. It's amazing. Jesus tells his disciples, you get them something to eat. Where are we going to get enough food to feed all these people? All we've got is this kid's lunch over here, and he's got, you know, a few fish and some loaves of bread. But what is that for so many? And Jesus used that as an opportunity to show and to demonstrate his power. Okay, to teach them. As Merle Tinney would say, to demonstrate his power over quantity. Okay? In other words, you know, having an abundance of stuff was not a problem for God. Okay? You'd have 50,000 people. Would he have been able to feed them?
Yes.
Sure he would. Sure he would. You know, you take care of people's needs. Now, we know that some of those folks in that crowd pretty well got lost on the spiritual lessons that Jesus was sharing with them. John chapter 6 tells us that. Because later on, when they come back again, Jesus is there with the crowds, and they're all chasing after him, and Jesus confronts them with it and says, you know, you're looking for him because you ate the bread and had your fill. So for a lot of them, they were just happy that they got something to eat that day. They went to the concert and they got a free meal and were happy about that, but
they missed the point.
The message was lost on some of them, a lot of them. And I imagine there were at least a few people in that crowd that never forgot what Jesus did. A couple of fish and a few loaves of bread. So Jesus took care of not just their spiritual need, but also their physical need. Chuck, you had... They're way down the hill somewhere.
They don't see it. But nonetheless, they receive the blessings of America. And I think us, on this side of the cross, are much the same way.
Okay.
We don't acknowledge or believe that it really happened.
Okay.
That it's real, that it's genuine. And so that's our challenge for all of us, to know that that did happen. Even though we weren't there in the midst, it did happen, and we're still receiving the benefits of it to this very moment.
Okay. All right. Okay, real quickly. What about for the sinful woman? Luke chapter 6, in that story. What did Jesus' compassion move him to do for her? Okay. He forgave her. Not only did he forgive her, but what else did he do for her? Okay. But he validated her, didn't he? We talked about that last time. You know how, you remember how he compared what you know, Simon didn't do versus what she did.
Right.
Okay? So he not only forgave her sins, but he validated her. Again, value. Okay? Which was, in the eyes of Simon and the other guests there, this woman had no value because she was a sinner. All right, what about Zacchaeus? Okay, all right. Changed his vision, didn't he? Yeah. Okay. Also gave him some value, didn't he?
Yes.
You know, when he went to Zacchaeus' house instead of, you know, one of the other good faithful Jews in the crowd, you know, to have dinner with them, as we talked about last week, you know, he went to Zacchaeus' house, the house of a sinner, gave him. And that's why understanding the value of people is so vitally important. When we lose sight of the value of people, anyone, whether it's people in general or whether it's an individual person in our Jerusalem, when we lose sight of the value of that person, then we've lost sight of everything. So we need to have that kind of vision that Jesus had for people. Recognizing their value that then leads us to compassion for whatever's going on with them. All right? Okay, lesson number two next week. And I'd encourage you to do the experience it part on here. This is about your folks and your Jerusalem and what you're going to do with them and so forth. Praying for them, write them a note and so forth. Bring them to Bible class. Put their name on the prayer list out here by my door so that we can all be praying for them. So that we can be trying to reach more and more people. All right? Next week is going to focus on Jesus and the cross and really the aspect of forgiveness. So I'd encourage you for that to, you have the study guide, work on that and get ready for the discussion ahead of time for next week. And Dale will lead the first part of that